What's up, everybody? We're back with another edition of the Ad Podcast. And today we have a really exciting guest for you. Jake Carls is the CEO and chief rainmaker of Midday Squares, one of the fastest growing CPG brands out there. They're a functional chocolate bar and a good for you chocolate bar, and a little bit of a blend of a decadent chocolate treat meets protein bar. Jake has been honored by Ernst & Young as a finalist for Entrepreneur of the Year, and he's also a 30 under 30 for Forbes in the CPG and food and beverage category. Jake, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Dude, I'm fired up. I know we've been trying to get this happen for a while, so I'm amped up. And you know what's unique is it right now it's like 5:30 my time, so I haven't eaten anything, so I'm eating like Hershey nibs like right now. It's not good for me, but I need that sugar rush right now. And so nibs in your podcast. I love it.
Yeah, that's wild, man. Well, I know I thought it was really interesting to learn that you're actually allergic to three of the four flavors of your protein bar. But you can use one of them. Is that correct?
Yeah. So our functional chocolate bars are basically, imagine you took a chocolate bar and a protein bar and you had a baby, but you got rid of all the junk that's in protein bar. So it actually tastes good. There's no aftertaste. It makes you feel good. It doesn't bloat you. And it's your afternoon snack to get you through the rest of your afternoon. And when we made this product, the first one didn't have nuts in it. And I'm highly, like, deadly allergic to nuts. And as we started to do R&D, our team started to realize that nuts actually help with a lot of the nutritional facts and the textures, the taste, and the proteins and all the good fats. So they ended up making four other flavors coming up soon that all have nuts in it. So I actually have not been part of the R&D for the last 4.5 years of our business, which makes me sad. But my allergist says I'm fucked up, excuse my language, because I go into my factory every day and I inhale the smells, because it smells so delicious, of the chocolate bars. And I'm like, I can't help it. Like it's like an addiction. And he told me, he's like, something's wrong with you that you go in there every day with the risk. And I was like, it's not risky. It's now 4.5 years. Maybe I'm not allergic anymore. So maybe it's time to try. So I'm doing a retest actually in the coming months to see if I'm no longer allergic to nuts. And if I'm not, that'll be a huge moment in my life, because imagine building a business and not being able to try your products. It's really scary and sad, actually.
Yeah, that's wild. You know, I've worked on a lot of alcohol brands and I've been sober for 10 years. So that's always fun, you know.
Similar thing.
Right on, man. Well, hey, I want to jump into your background a little bit. You are basically an entrepreneur from day one. I know you went to school to study to be an actuary and work in investment banking. Didn't get into that field, probably, you know, very fortuitous in hindsight, but I know that that's what you studied for in college. But you pretty much went right into entrepreneurship, I think, after watching an episode of Shark Tank. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, why do you think you got the entrepreneurial bug? Tell us a little bit briefly about your first two ventures. I know one worked out swimmingly, but then you just lost passion for it and then you moved on to another business that really helped you learn how to build community and just be a rock star on social. But you had some problems as an operator, which then eventually led you to partner up with your sister and your brother-in-law in Midday Square. So could you just tell us a little bit about your early journey?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I realize I'm wearing a TikTok pin. I was at a conference yesterday and they were like the big sponsor and they gave me it. I'm just taking it off.
Yeah, all good. We can give TikTok a little plug. I don't mind. Yeah,
TikTok, they do good stuff. But long story short, you know, I always say this. I was never strong academically in my entire life. I was always insecure that I was the dumb one out of my friend group or the one that's least academically, you know, talented or gifted. And it actually irked me for a very long time. I would fail in school and my friends would be brilliant. And they are brilliant. But I needed to do something else. So I was the class clown. The class clown made me popular, made me fun, made people love me. I got into so much trouble that I was almost the only one not going to graduate high school in the entire grade. And when that hit me, I realized that maybe being the class clown and as fun as it is in the spotlight that you are, and me actually being authentically myself at the time was actually the wrong move, because I didn't fit into society and I was going to be an outlier for the negative side or deemed a failure. And in that moment, I changed my whole life and I started following the herd. I started being like everybody else, everyone else in this world. I started following, you know, I got to do well in school. I got to get a job. I got to have a family. And that's life. That's the only thing that life's about, because that's what the rules of society in quotations were. And when I was 21 years old, and I was trying to be an actuary. This is my third year of university, I believe. I was failing and it was so hard. And I only chose actuary to prove to people that I'm smart, right? It wasn't because I wanted to do it. It's because it's a very hard program. For those who don't know what it is, it's very deep math and statistics, like the deepest algorithmic stuff in the world. You basically predict, sometimes in people's cases, life insurance and the policies of why they are created, right? And I'll never forget, third year, I applied to all the investment banks, all the insurance companies, got rejected from each and every one of them. Not one accepted me. Maybe it's because the way I dress. I'm in like a pair of overalls right now and a cowboy hat.
I love it, man. I love it.
And glasses indoors. But no, the truth is I didn't get a job. And in that moment, I came home sulking like a baby. And I was on my parents' couch and I was, you know, being really like miserable because I was going to have to get a job I didn't want to do, that all my friends were in their dream jobs. And I was going to have to do a job that I was really avoiding. And I was watching Shark Tank, man. And I saw the show and I saw this guy pitch his dream. He was so energized, momentous. Yet he had so much risk in his life. He had so much risk in terms of losing everything. He had family, he had kids, he had to put food on the table, yet he had two mortgages on his house to pay the business. And long story short, I looked at him and I said, whatever this guy's on, whatever drug or whatever he's on, I need that. He looks so free. And I realized there's no drugs. It was just the drug of life, you know, living you being you. And that was the moment I decided entrepreneurship was my path to life, because it took away all the rules of society for me. And it said, hey, Jake, you are you. Build something that you want to build for you, not for somebody else. And that was the moment my whole life changed. 21 years old, 9 years ago. I started my first business. It was a fitness business. Like you said, I did very well in it, made a lot of money. You know, I was training people outside here in Montreal where I'm from. It's cold outside, so people like being outside in the summer. Did that for 3 years, then closed it because I lost passion. And then I started a business based on throwing parties and, you know, using community to sell clothing. Went bankrupt on that because I was a horrible operator. And then my partners who are now, my current partners, my sister, my brother-in-law approached me. And they're like, you are a great brand builder. You are a rainmaker. You are this character that loves to bring people together and bring the light to, you know, communities. We could do the operations, which you're shit at. You do the brand building and make sure that Midday Square is the company that we launched is relevant to everyone that wants it to be relevant to them, right? And that was it. We launched Midday Squares August 2018. And the idea was build the next Hershey's in the better for you chocolate space, but do it while building a brand that means something to people and makes them feel something inside deeply.
Yeah, I love that. And I love this concept that you've coined it. I haven't seen it anywhere else. I know it's a trend, but this idea of building out loud, the idea that the entire time you are struggling as an entrepreneur to do all the things that, you know, entrepreneurs face, whether it's scaling, hiring people, fundraising rounds, setting up operations, you know, all the good, the bad, and the ugly, you decided to document that from day one to really what you call create fans and friends instead of customers. Can you talk a little bit around why you had, you know, what was that insight and why did you decide that, you know, it was going to be so important for you guys to document that process on social media from day one?
Oh, so this is easy. And I agree with you. I don't think I created it, but I really took it and I'm trying to promote it and inspire others to do this kind of content. Maybe Elon Musk was the one that was building out loud of his whole life. But the idea was simple. You know, we have social media today. We didn't have it 15, 20 years ago. As a business 15, 20 years ago, it was almost impossible if you were a small business to grab the attention of anybody. You couldn't afford to pay for Super Bowl ads. You couldn't afford to, you know, buy TV ads. Radio ads were expensive. Newspaper ads were expensive. Billboards were expensive. So as a small business, you were relying on kind of like demoing local friends and family. And it was just an unfair playing ground. If you had money and distribution, you win the attention of the consumer because you could put it anywhere. Mm. Now, today, we have something called social media. Social media has democratized attention for the consumer, meaning the consumer chooses who, what, when, why they pay attention to. If they don't want to pay attention to a business, they do not have to. They could unsubscribe, they could change the channel, they could block with the snap of their finger, meaning you could buy ads, but they don't need to see them. Once they see them, they don't like them. They could choose to not see them. It's not like a billboard. You can't ignore it. If you're running on the highway every day, you see it, right? So what this has done and made me realize was, if it's democratized now to the consumer, now the consumer has to opt into your content. They have to opt into giving you their attention. It's now a privilege to earn a customer's or a consumer's attention. So I said to my partners, if we want to win in a saturated market of chocolate and grocery, which is dominant, there's 40,000 products on a typical supermarket shelf. Mm-hmm. You don't, if you don't have money to buy up the space, you have one spot, right? So I said, if we want to win, we need the customers to feel like they're emotionally connected to our brand. So I said to my partners, if we build out loud, meaning we document and we show everything in the business that people never get to see. So imagine Shark Tank, but on steroids, meaning like, we're not showing you just raising money, but we're showing you hiring, firing, therapy, breakdowns, milestones, the whole nine yards. Then you as a consumer are no longer transactional with us. You are, hey, I know these people. I like them, or I hate them. I don't want to support them, or I love them. And yes, I'm going to go find their product. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to tell everyone about it. So the building out loud allowed us to earn the attention of the customer, the privilege, at a very low cost. And then once they opted in, we now had open communication, which was opted in for from somebody that was interested and wanted to know more about. And that allowed us to grow really fast as a business within a saturated market and not have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on billboards, radio ads, Super Bowl ads, and all that stuff. So I think that that's where the concept came. And you know, today I'm seeing more and more people living by it. And you're seeing consumers more than ever are watching content on TikTok, LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, X. And then they're watching a minute of content and they're like, oh, wow, I want to buy this product. I love this person's story. I want to support them. I want to be part of their journey. It's never been that before, but this is all human nature concepts that have been around actually for as long as we've been human. The only difference is now is you can get on someone's phone within the snap of a finger. That's the only difference.
Yeah, I love that. I'd like to talk a little bit about the tactical side in the early days. So I guess when you started off, were you just like shooting everything on your cell phone and just like super scrappy from a production perspective? Like what was your production pipeline like in the early days? And my other question is there something interesting to shoot every single day? Like how did you stack your day to make sure that it was interesting for video?
So great, great question. So number one, when we started, it was me, my sister, my brother-in-law. So three partners. We didn't have any really money to spend on anything else. We had no sales, right? So we actually just took out our iPhones. We had no social followings, the three of us. We just started posting raw content of like day-to-day, like fighting, making the bars, delivering the bars to the customer because we couldn't afford shipping. And people were just like, oh, wow, this company's hustling so much. These people are, they're a bit wild. They're not showing corporate stuff. It's a little different than corporate. It's like almost like, this is so, it's like reality. And eventually when, I'll never forget the moment my partners and I were fighting about something, we were having an argument and it was serious, it was deep. And I told them, hold on 1 second, let me pull out the camera, film this. And we all just started laughing hysterically and we're like, what the hell? And then I realized in that moment that it disrupts flow when you have to do it. So our first, one of our first hires was a videographer and an editor to literally capture the content so that we could operate the business. And there's interesting drama in a startup. There's a lot of scrappiness, a lot of things that companies are afraid to show, right? So I just said to my videographer, I said, let's document every single thing that happens. We'll find a story within it, whether it's like, oh, we can't ship today, whether, you know, a little machine breaks down, what happens, whether we get a radio interview on the local news. Like there's always something in a scrappy startup, right? And then as today has happened, now we're a lot more methodical. We have a team, an editing team and video team, whatever, to create the content. But it's not like almost every day it's filming 24/7 like it was. It's more like, hey, we have a story we want to capture. We know that this is happening. Let's capture the reality of it, of what's going on. And then let's see if it's worth telling that story. Because now we don't just have people in our local city following us. You know, we have people all over the world. So I'll say all over North America, let's call it, that are watching us. So someone in New York and Texas and Montreal are all watching, but New York and Texas has only seen the brand for the last 2 years. They've seen a developed brand. The people in Montreal have been watching us since we were scrapping a little condo. Very different on the storytelling angle, but we still document and share the authentic story of what's happening. It's just, we're a little bit more polished on how we share that story with a hook, a storyline, and a little bit more methodical than we did just random raw posting at the beginning.
Yeah, I love that. And can you talk a little bit about how you've really tied in your personal brand and kind of building out the brand behind Midday Squares? I think you one time compared what you do as the chief rainmaker to running for political office. Yeah. You're literally like traveling around the country, now traveling around the world, and really getting in front of crowds any way you can, whether that's a speaking engagement or a pop-up or something like that. But I think that was a really interesting way to think about it, is really like getting out there and stumping almost in a way, and how important those like in real life experiences are when you're talking to big groups of people. How is your personal brand and the business marketing kind of intertwined?
So I don't think personal brand's necessary for a company to succeed, but I think that if you are able to build your personal brand, this is an ability to build more fans, like diehard fans that will not just buy your product, but shout about it, tell people, get you opportunities. So for me being a character and a personality, I was like, yo, I got to put myself out there, and not just about the Midday Square story, but about Jay Carles. I live an interesting life. Why not share it? So I start to share this on LinkedIn and start blowing up. I started to gain a lot more opportunities. Next thing you know, I have buyers, I have retailers, I have investors, I have media people, you know, connecting with me. And now it's like, oh my God, this is helping the network of Midday Squares by miles. This is becoming a huge, not only revenue source, but it's becoming a huge value add to the company. And you know, and I would say if you have it in you to build your brand and want to put time into it, it is a no-brainer. It is an absolute no-brainer added value to your company, as long as you are not a mean person and not a crazy. Now, how I compare it to politics is because if you just look at election years, which I think you guys have in the United States this year, it's all based on storytelling and, you know, hype. And yes, policy is obviously that should be the most important, but the idea is that you have to gain voters, you have to gain votes. So you have to convince people to buy into your vision, onto what, or your policy execution, or whatever you're pitching. So the same thing goes for businesses. I have to get you to buy into Midday Squares' vision or my vision to then want to support, because today more than ever, humans want to connect. They want to connect at a deeper level than just buy products and commodities. They want to know who you are. They want to know what you stand for. They want to know what kind of person you are. And if you truly are a good person, then you being you, people will respect that energy at a level that, you know, people don't even realize. Like when I'm myself, people feel that and they want to be around it. They want to help. They want to tell people about it, because the world is full of inauthenticity. The world is poisoned with it. And if you are just real and you are telling your story, which we all go through great experiences of life, every single one of us, somebody's going to be interested in it. Somebody's going to be curious. Somebody's going to want to know more. And you never know who that somebody is. That could be your next investor. That could be your next buyer of your company. That could be your next team member. That could be your next partner. That could be next. That could be an anchor that's ready to talk about you on the news. So I always tell people, study politicians, not for the sake of their policies, which I think, you know, you should for if you're going to vote, but study it for how they tell their stories and gain the momentum of the voter, because they spend multi-billions of dollars on elections, on storytelling, hype, getting people to back them. So same thing applies to business. It's just, we're not dealing with politics and government. We're dealing with, you know, consumers and a product, right? So it's a different way of looking at things, and it allows you to think differently from everyone else in the space.
Yeah. And another thing that I really love is you literally like rep the brand everywhere you go. I watched quite a few interviews with you over the last couple of weeks, and you are always wearing a Midday Squares hat, always wearing like a t-shirt, something like always repping the brand. And even I feel like you guys took it a step further and actually made like streetwear that was cool.
Yeah.
Like people would actually be proud to wear, versus like, you know, you get promotional items all the time and half of them go in the trash can because they're bad quality and they don't look good and they don't fit well or they don't feel good. So can you talk about like how you were purposeful around your merch strategy, not just for the stuff that you wear to represent the brand as the CEO, but maybe stuff that you give out to partners and influencers and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, yo, like you got to put time and energy into the image of your brand. Like, you know, like I don't want to put out junk products that people aren't going to wear, that promotional gear that typically you throw in the garbage or you put in pajamas or whatever it is. Like you want people to be proud. If they're going to wear your merch, make them look fucking good. Like it's not complex. So for us, like, I want to wear it every day, not just because it's my logo and it's the brand I represent, but because I'm proud of it and I look good in it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't wear something ugly when it shrinks, it doesn't fit, it looks weird. So for us, we're like, okay, well, if we could create some merch that looks good and wear it all the time, people are going to want to wear it. So then they ask us for it and they're like, hey, can we get some? And then since it's not actually a real line yet, it's not fully made, it becomes this exclusivity. And then you give it to your fans, you give it to your people that help you, like our retail partners, our investors, and then it becomes community. And you're right. So many people message us daily saying, hey, can I get some merch? Can I buy some merch? They want to now buy it.
Wow.
And the reason being is because we're not only building a brand that is a chocolate bar, but it's a brand that makes you feel something. So if you could rep it by not just eating the product, but by wearing it and being proud of it, then we've done it right. And again, this wear your merch whenever you can every day and don't get annoyed of it, because you never know who you're with. When I'm on a plane, next thing you know, someone comes in, oh my God, you're the guy from Midday Squares. I love Midday Squares. Here, I have an idea. I wanted to help you get into this hotel. You never know, right? And if you have your logo, people will register it in their brain and be like, oh shit, I know that brand. I like that brand, or I hate that brand. I'm going to say something. And it's just a no-brainer way of advertising, especially if you're not in your office every day and you're traveling, you're moving around. You should be wearing your brand every single day, and do not cheap out on the product. Make it epic. So it's not worn once, but it's worn as many times as somebody wants to wear it. And so we're going to be making even sicker stuff in the next 2 years. My sister is actually a designer prior to Midday Squares.
Oh, wow. We're
going to start to design sick merch that is like actually epic, where you is really cool and not just, it has nothing to do with food, zero. And just sick. And again, bringing people together, community, fandom, friends, not customers.
Have you ever had an opportunity to collaborate with a fashion brand or something like that to make cool merch?
We had people come and ask us, but we just, again, when you're a startup or you're a middle-sized company, you still have limited time resources to put toward things. So for us right now, the focus is to continue to build out the brand relevance, but also the sales execution, the distribution, and make sure the ops is on fire right now, because that's the most important thing. Without that, we actually don't have a business, right? So the other stuff, 100% we will do a collab one day with a sick brand that we appreciate, that we value, that you know, is authentically, you know, us as well. But right now that is not the focus. We're going to continue doing like basic stuff that we can do, like, you know, with the effort that we already put in for the last couple of years. And then eventually we'll do some cool things. It's just, everything takes time. Everything great in life takes time. And if it's not, this is a big motto we live by. If it's not fuck yeah, then it's no.
Yeah, that's cool. I was going to ask you about that quote at some point, so I'm glad you brought that up. And then, you know, you talked about another component that you guys are, you know, focused on, very operational kind of nuts and bolts type stuff. I thought it was pretty wild that early on, you know, you guys decided to go vertical versus going out and hiring a co-packer. My understanding is you interviewed 24 co-packers. None of them could produce the product to the quality and expectations that you guys wanted. So you actually went out and raised money and then worked with your local government to get some tax incentives and some subsidies to build your own manufacturing. Can you talk a little bit about that process? I imagine that was no small feat, because most direct consumer brands in the early days, they just focus on marketing and sales, and then they let somebody else handle the operational stuff.
Yeah. So when we started this business, we originally were like, okay, let's scale this business like other food companies. Let's get our product co-packed, because that will take the ops side off the business and we can focus on what we're really great at, which is sales, marketing, and storytelling and community. But when we went to 26 different co-packers across North America, they were actually unable to make the Midday Square the way we wanted the Midday Square to look like, that we were making in our condo kitchen. They had we'd come in with a circle and they'd come out with a triangle. Like it just was so different, right? And the idea was we had two options: change the product and be like almost like everybody else and just build a crazy sales and marketing team. Or do we go out and figure out how to scale this and, you know, scale it the way we want and build the product and item that we want to build that's true to us? And we knew it would be a huge CapEx investment, which we didn't have the money for. So we ended up figuring it out. My sister figured out a way to build this factory with engineers. You know, she worked so hard guessing and checking. There was no guarantee. It ended up costing us $4 million to build, but this line is custom, mostly custom. It's unique. It's actually a huge superpower of ours now, 5 years later, because our margin is higher than our competitors And we're on this tear now of just, you know, controlling that. It's powerful. Don't get me wrong. There's pain every day, every single day there's pain, but, yeah, man, like it's been probably the best decision we've made, but most painful decision.
Wow. And another innovation that I think you guys might've been one of the first, because I hadn't heard about it up till when I was doing the research on you, but you offered a trial over the internet. So like, you know, one of the most important things for CPG is to get the brand in the hands of consumers. You know, back in the day, most of those happened through retail partnerships. You would do a pop-up and basically hand out free samples at Costco or Whole Foods or whatever. And you guys decided to do that through the website. So basically anybody could come on to the website and basically pay for shipping and you would mail them a free sample. I imagine that was expensive, but a pretty innovative way to get the product in the hand of a customer who could then fall in love with it. Could you talk about how successful that was and how risky it might've been sending out all those free samples as well?
So great. Yeah. When we started, we needed people to try the product. So we were confident in the Midday Square that people would love it once they actually tried it. But because we didn't have big followings or a big community at the time, we decided to do a sample program that was like 25 cents a sample. And the idea is we would actually hand deliver it to you in our city so wow. that you got this experience from the founding team and you actually got to know us, but we also got to know you. And we actually even wrote on some of the messages, like we'd give a Polaroid picture as well that we took every day of the three of us to show who we really are. And we sometimes even look you up on social media and be like, hey, we love your dog, like Charles, let's say your dog's name's Charles and talk about that. So we humanized at a level that's unheard of. So the scaling of it was not really possible, but the humanization factor got people talking, got community building, got people excited, and we got feedback very quickly. But the sample program, we thought that because our product, we were confident in our product for product market fit, we actually were confident we said to them, like, if you don't like it, well, you could return it and we'll refund you for that 25 cents. You can imagine we were losing so much money, not from the refunds, but from just the delivery, the making of the product for 25 cents. It's crazy. We did it for a couple of, I think it was 2-3 months or whatever it was. And we got a lot of trial, a lot of people trying it, a lot of people buzzing about it. And then we actually shut it down. And we realized that we tried to do a larger sample pack and just charge, you know, heavy shipping costs and all that stuff. But then we even just cut it completely. And now we just have our regular base. And once we opened up more enough retail, we cut it because then you could buy one unit at a retail store. And we have, like, you know, we sell at Target, we sell at Whole Foods, Sprouts. So there's a lot of distribution. So meaning that, you know, people didn't have to wait online and buy one little sample. Now they can just go buy one bar instead of buying two boxes on our website minimum right now.
That's awesome. I want to circle back to something you talked about earlier in the interview with the idea that LinkedIn is actually a platform that you use quite often. And you don't think about LinkedIn always as a social media platform. I think this is kind of the year that LinkedIn is coming into its own as a social platform. A lot more content creators that are LinkedIn first in the way that they engage and interact with their audiences, a lot more CEOs and executives, you know, telling their story and being active on LinkedIn more above and beyond just sharing like press releases and basic stuff, getting a little bit more personal and using video. Like LinkedIn's about to launch a vertical video feed, not unlike TikTok or YouTube Shorts or Instagram Reels. Can you talk a little bit more about LinkedIn as a social platform and what you think of it and its potential as an influencer marketing platform, which is kind of a bet that we're making right now?
LinkedIn is huge. They are figuring their platform out, meaning it's at stages where you could play around and take advantage of that moment where, you know, people don't really know what's going on, what to do, right? So for me, I thought LinkedIn was always just jobs and resumes and stats that you post or quotes, like really serious stuff. But if 99% of people are posting that, and you're the one posting storytelling, that's real storytelling and value add to your life or somebody else's life, that's, you know, something that's relevant to you or somebody else, I promise you, you're gonna have such a great reach that you don't even realize with the right people, because LinkedIn has a bunch of people that are in a mindset of already doing business or in their career paths. It's a more serious mind. So when you have some content that's different, it pops into their feeds, the algorithm will push it. And it is almost like free marketing, very influential folks because of the way their mindset is in that moment that they're on that platform. So you're in already a buying mode, or you're in a mode that's like, hey, I'm looking for something serious. I'll pay attention. I'll look into it. You know, if they're posting here, it means credibility. Like, it's a weird thing. So I started posting on LinkedIn 2 years ago, and I went from like 500 followers to like 37,000.
Wow.
Span of like 2 years. And, you know, I sometimes get 300,000 views on a post, like organically. It's crazy. So it's a missed opportunity for anyone that's not posting, and don't post the resume. You could post that occasionally, but don't make that your LinkedIn post every day. Make it about the story. And there's no rules. Remember that, other than don't put hate out and all that stuff. There is no rules in what works for what platform. Let me be very clear. I post videos of me dancing with a shirt off on LinkedIn and it goes viral. And then I post a serious thing about how Midday Squares is doing a very strategic manufacturing strategy, and that goes viral. The spectrum's anywhere. Whatever floats your boat or whatever story makes you happy and you think is valuable, get it on LinkedIn. It's early still. I believe in that thing. I'm betting on LinkedIn. I'm all in. So I think that people just need to get on it. Whether you're a CEO, whether you're an executive, whether you're a founder, whether you're someone in your career, whether you are unemployed, get on LinkedIn now.
Yeah, I love that. And I also love the idea that, you know, you don't have to be polished and professional only on LinkedIn. You can kind of let people into, you know, who you are as like a regular everyday person and kind of more relatable content. Maybe the same stuff that you would, you know, post on other social platforms, you can also post on LinkedIn now. You don't have to be so, you know, so like polished, I guess.
My friend, you do not need to be polished. People don't want polished. There'll be certain people that still do, but who cares? Mm-hmm. There's 8 billion, close to 8 billion people in the world. Wake up. We're all not the same. So, you know, and following the herd, you know, if I could leave you with this, which is important. Following the herd is usually not the right answer. And I'll tell you why. I learned something in school. If you take a graph and you input average decisions every single day of your life into the graph, meaning you just follow the herd, the average human, be like them, then the output statistically will be average, meaning it will be a mediocre straight line that goes up a little bit. Now, at first, that doesn't seem so bad. But if I take that same graph and now I input unaverage decisions every single day of your life, you just being yourself is unaverage. So you just being authentically yourself is different because your DNA is different. Your stories and experiences are different as a human. But if you embrace those, then it's unaverage decisions. Your output statistically will be unaverage, meaning you will have outlier points, up, down, up, down. It'll be a zigzag if you connect it. Now, at first, the zigzag's hideous. But if you look at the zigzag from a different perspective of, hey, the loss points, the ones underneath the straight line, is actually not a loss if I look at it as a learning experience, or if it's not a failure, if I look at it as an opportunity. So then if you look at it like that, then every outlier thing is a win because you learn, it's a win. You go through something, you experience something that, you know, you're never going to do it again. That's a win. So I live my life being on average every single day, which is just me embracing myself, wearing glasses indoors, wearing a cowboy hat, having the time of my life, and people love it. And by the way, no one in life that's mediocre has ever done anything fantastic, in my opinion. They've done good things, but fantastic or incredible, I'm not so sure. So live your life like that. And it's not going to guarantee you success. It definitely won't.
Yeah.
But it will guarantee you a chance at having success.
I love that. And I love that idea of kind of the authenticity of leaning into your personal brand. You know, you have a very distinct look and a distinct personal brand. I'm from the West Coast. I kind of, you know, am a sales guy in the advertising and marketing world, but I lean into my roots as like a surfer and a, you know, from skate culture and stuff like that. You know, when I go to conferences, I can't stand wearing a suit and, you know, the stuff that my contemporaries wear. And I think it makes me stand out because I'm the one guy that's dressed up, you know, in surf clothes and stuff like that instead.
You're winning by being you. And that's it. Like, you win by being you. You might not always have a societal success from it, but you will have success within yourself. And there's nothing, no better feeling in life when you enter the uncomfortable zone and it starts to feel like fucking great, you know?
I love it, man. I wanted to ask you about your kind of take on college. So, you know, you went and studied this very specific thing that ended up not being, you know, what you wanted to do and or what you ended up doing, and also not what made you successful. But you and I share in common that we're both Sigma Chi's. And I found that to be very formative in my life experience. So I didn't learn much going to film school at UC Santa Barbara, but I learned how to run a small business when I was the social chairman of Sigma Chi, and when I was the magister, and, you know, did various positions within the fraternity. And then also, you know, once I got out into the real world, you know, I was able to get legs up from, you know, guys like Keith Kroc, who founded Ariba and DocuSign, and, you know, had a few Sigma Chi's that kind of extended their hand and mentored me and gave me chances in the professional world where I never would have gotten those chances if I didn't have that experience. I was wondering, you know, what's your take on kind of that experience? And are there any stories from your journey where I got someone from the Brotherhood kind of helped hook you up or kind of helped you along in your journey?
I'm all for college. I think it's a great way to meet community. For me, I knew I wasn't academically strong or anything like that, and I wasn't going to get a job. Originally, I thought my job would be investment banking, so I took a strategy that would get me there, but didn't get me there in the end. So what I learned from school is it's all community. You can make what you want of it. Some people learn a lot. You know, you study to be a lawyer, a doctor, an accountant, you know, certain engineering, you study certain skills. You actually learn a lot, and it's very valuable. It's extremely valuable, actually. And in a great place. I think for me, I learned so much from being at college in terms of being in the environment, meeting people, having the time of my life, experiencing being outside of my hometown. And like, these are like life lessons. Like if I didn't go there, I wouldn't have learned a lot. I'm not saying that school's for everyone, but I think that if you want to go and explore, it's great, but take advantage of the environment of all these students, all these young people, all these, this energy, this fun, and join things, try things. I joined Sigma Chi. I didn't want to go into a fraternity originally, but I joined, and it actually was very community driven and it was very fun. I met a lot of good friends that I still work with today and I'm friends with today. So I think that from a college standpoint, I think it's what you make of it. And I'm all for it, by the way. I'm all for going to college. And I'm all for if you don't want to go to college. Either way, I think what you got to do what you want to do. There's no rules. There's no societal rules on what you should do. There's no good or bad. There's no right or wrong. The only right or wrong is if you're a bad person or not. And I think that the second thing is, you know, once you're in these environments, like for me, I knew I wasn't academically strong. So I took advantage of everything else about college. Mm. And I developed skills that I threw parties. I hosted gatherings. I created, you know, community. I started to learn how to play with social media. Like I learned all these things that I likely wouldn't have probably learned if I wasn't in that environment, because it kind of forced me to figure it out type of thing. Right. So I don't know. I'm more of a sense you got to do what you want to do in life. That's it.
Yeah. No, I love that. You spoke about a marketing stunt that I thought was super interesting. So in the early days of Midday Squares, you would go down to hockey games and you would buy like a very specific seat in the arena where you could like take the Midday Squares and like throw them up on the Jumbotron when the camera was like panned over on the penalty box. And you also in one of those moments met like a really important relationship that kind of maybe helped, you don't know for sure, but potentially maybe helped grease the wheels to get your guys' loan through for the factory. So can you talk a little bit about that marketing stunt and like, where'd you get the idea for that? And do you have any other cool kind of guerrilla marketing stories that you haven't talked about publicly before?
I just think that, you know, for me, like I buy tickets to hockey game. I spend money to be in the right seat. And the reason why is, you know, there's cameras in places that can give you national television exposure. And for me, I knew that if a guy went in the penalty box, all I had to do is put the bars on top of his head or her head and it would go on national television. And then the spend that I did was worth it for every penny. But the guy next to me was a very prominent figure. I'm not going to talk about him as an individual, but basically he's a very prominent figure and I didn't know who he was. And, you know, me being me and being excited and doing that and having the bars and my logo and everything that I was wearing and being passionate and sharing my story. You know, he asked me my whole life after, cause he saw he was laughing hysterically from what I did. And he's just like, to me, he's like, tell me your story. And I told my story and he's probably a key figure in our journey. For you're right. Helping something potentially. I don't know for a fact, by the way, I have zero clue. But what I could tell you is that it was a TSN turning point. It was a pivotal moment. But again, I was so proud to share my story that it actually did something. Again, I had the product on me. I had all these things that is intentional. So for me, if you're going to go do something, be intentional. You know, you never know what sharing your story can do, and it could raise money for you. It could save your company from, you know, a legal battle. It could be anything. You should be sharing your story 24/7 proudly with energy and momentum that you truly believe in. And if you don't do that and you don't want to do that, then maybe the business isn't for you. But other guerrilla stuff, yeah, there's so many. Like you just gotta go on Midday Squares as TikTok or Instagram, and you'll see all the stories that, you know, we've had some wild things happen. But Dylan, I gotta run now. Yeah, like I really appreciate, you know, you having me. And if I could leave one thing for anyone listening, be yourself, put horse blinders on, stay focused on what makes you great. And block out all the negative noise that comes into your ears, or even the noise that's out there. It's very distracting. You know what's best. Follow your gut. And most of the time, 9 out of 10 times, your gut's correct. So that's a pretty good odd. If you just listen to the noise, you're going to get distracted.
I love it. Well, thanks for spending some time with us today, Jake. Your story is amazing. Anything else you want to plug or point people in the direction of?
Follow Midday Squares on social and add me on LinkedIn. Jake Carl is happy to connect. And if you want to buy Midday Squares, go to any retailer, typically in the refrigerated section or on our website, www.middaysquares.com. Appreciate you, Dylan. Appreciate you all. Go rock on and win big.
Thanks, buddy. So for those of you following along at home, if you enjoyed my interview with Jake today, don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening or watching this podcast. If you give us a review and you give us 5 stars, that helps the show find a larger audience. And most importantly, if you have a colleague or somebody out there in your network that you think would benefit from the conversation I had with Jake today, don't forget to share the show. Thanks so much for coming on, bud.
Appreciate you, Dylan. Take care, brother.
Cheers. Take it easy.